Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off today by telling you what the dance parties in the locker rooms, the Bears and the Saints and the Colts have to do with what you should be looking for in your team's next head coach. Then, as always, Jenny and Connor come in for the news, and we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in. Week 15 is in the books. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And we're going to kick things off here by helping out the fan bases that are going to be looking for head coaches in 2 weeks. And I thought that the reason this kind of popped in my head this week is I was on the train coming down here to New York on Monday, and I saw the video of the Colts dancing in the locker room. And then, you know, I looked at the Bears doing it again. And we've all seen the video of the Saints and how they have a DJ in the locker room. And it's interesting to me because you have two first-year head coaches in Frank Reich and Matt Nagy, and then a 13-year head coach in Sean Payton. And, I mean, look, the videos are funny and everything else, but beyond just that, it's sort of I think it's a really good thing for everyone who's looking for a head coach to sort of keep in mind over the next month, in that that's – an example of coaches trying to reach their players. And everyone out there is looking for the next Sean McVay, right? The guy who can juice their offense and work with their young quarterback. And look, Sean's a freak, right? He's a coaching freak. He's like, he is to coaching what Randy Moss was to catching a football, what Lawrence Taylor was to rushing the passer, just a natural in every way. But I think people get too focused on what he's done with Jared Goff, what he's done with the offense, and aren't focusing enough on his personality and his ability to galvanize people and his ability to lead a room. And it's such an important part of the job. And so we're going to bring Jenny and Connor in now. Like, I look at these teams that are going to be out there. It's like the Jets, the Browns, I think potentially the Broncos, the Bucks. Like, these teams that are going to be out there looking for head coaches. And I think every fan base is out there looking for, all right, like, here's a guy that can work with our quarterback. Here's a guy who can drop a play. Here's a guy who can call a game. And I almost think that that stuff doesn't matter unless you have the right sort of personality and you have the right sort of guy who can reach the players. Because if you can't get them, if you can't reach them, it doesn't matter what you're trying to teach them because it's not going to get through to them. And I just thought it was interesting watching Nagy, like, basically, like, it looked like a nightclub in their locker room, and it's been that way for the last few weeks. I think they call it Club Dub, right? And then the Colts dancing around in their locker room, and the same. And it's just, it's, I think that part of being a head coach gets lost sometimes.
Well, I think that's why, you know, you hear when coaches, you know, it's time for a change, right? Like Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. It's not like he suddenly forgot what he, you know, right, X's and O's, or forgot how to scheme things. I mean, obviously there's been some criticism of the offense being stale, but overall he hasn't forgotten everything he knows. It's just the message isn't getting. But, you know, it's interesting. I feel like sometimes it's a mix of personalities in a certain year. Like every mm-hmm. year is so different, right? Because yeah. Sean Payton has been there for a while and they have not always had that atmosphere, right? Or like look at the Eagles last year. You walked into that locker room and there was that feeling of just like everything was fun and easy and rolling, and all the teams that are doing well, they all have that. And I think it's part of it's definitely the head coach, but I think it's just sort of the right mix of personalities, the, you know, the right things coming together at the same time. And the Eagles last season, I think, are a perfect example of that. I mean, when we look at these teams that are doing well, I always think of that energy that you saw around the Eagles, and you compare it to this year where, yeah, they just came off a big win, but it has not been the same in the locker room. And so I think it's sort of a volatile chemistry that is can be very fleeting, right?
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting about that, right, is how many coaches and general managers think that they've created the atmosphere that fosters this, when really a lot of times it's in reverse, right? So, you know, the Rams had a great atmosphere last year under Sean McVay, but then they bring in people that a lot of teams have cast away. You're right. Seeing them struggle a little bit down the stretch. You know, is that something that impacts yeah. what they have going on? I think we saw Sean McVay for the first time at his press conference last week after that loss to the Eagles, legitimately concerned, you right. know, worried about his offense and where they're going. And I think it's interesting to me that I think the best coaches have learned over time that it's not, you know, they can go only so far in creating this culture and this atmosphere. And really, it's about these guys have to do it themselves. You know, a lot of this stuff is player driven. You know, they have to do it on their own.
Well, so much of it's results, too. I mean, it's a lot easier to have a hold of your team when you're winning.
I've never covered a team out of the playoffs that was had a fun locker room.
Right, right. So it's a lot of different things. I just think, I don't know. It's like, to me, it's like we get really, really wrapped up. And I think it happened to a higher degree this year. It's just the idea of having some sort of guru as your head coach. And it's just, to me, that's a percentage of the job. You know, like that's a percentage of it. That's not the whole job. And like, I think a lot of, like, if you like look at the coach of the year candidates this year. And I just think, like, Frank Reich's a former player. Anthony Lynn's a former player. Like, Matt Nagy even played in the Arena League. Like, it's just.
And Vrabel's done a good job.
Vrabel's done a good job, and he's a former player. And it's like, I think those guys understand, like, all right, like, I might have to do things a little different to reach the athlete now because I was different than the athlete that came before me, and I can recognize that. And so, I don't know. I just think it's going to be interesting because I think that there are going to be some teams that are going to reach for the next McVay, and I think there's a potential for disaster there. Like, I think there are going to be some real boom or bust hires where someone's going to get hired over the next couple of years who's an offensive guru who doesn't have the personality or maybe isn't quite ready to lead a room yet, where it's just going to blow the F up and it's going to look horrible. And so that's why I think like the hiring cycle this year, the hiring cycle next year, I think is going to be impacted by all of this.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, what was the basement of that scenario before, right, was Chip Kelly. And even when that blew up, they won 10 games in two of the three years that he was there.
Yep.
But I think you're right. I mean, it's a higher ceiling and it's a much, much lower basement at this point.
Right.
Teams are going to take some big swings
and
this offseason.
It's important to remember, too, like, it's not like Sean McVay. It's not like in December of 2016, everyone was like, who's going to get Sean McVay? It wasn't like that. He interviewed really well with the Rams and Niners, but it wasn't like there was this, like, you know, this cattle drive to go and get him. Like, it was like, oh, this is a promising young coach, and he's a little young, and I mean, he never was a quarterback's because he was a tight ends coach, you know, and like, hey, no, this is an interesting hire. Let's see how this goes. And, you know, it really, really worked. Or at least we think it worked. So far, it's really worked. Anyway, all right, we're going to get to the news now. First news item of the week, speaking of the Bears outlasted the Packers 24-17 to clinch their first NFC North title in 8 years. Matt Nagy, I think, is a coach of the year candidate. Mitchell Trubisky looked better. He's been really up and down, and I don't know that like you can survive and make it all the way to a Super Bowl with that sort of quarterback play, but they've been really good everywhere else. I got my Bear Leavers with me, right? And they've been really good everywhere else, and I think they've got the sort of formula where they got a chance to rise up and pop either the Rams or the Saints in the playoffs. Like, I think if I'm the Rams or the Saints, that's probably the team that I don't want to see.
Yeah, I mean, your quarterback is a notch below, but your defense is at least a notch above, if not several notches
right.
above some of the others, like thinking of the Chiefs, for instance. So, you know, it's sort of a plus-minus thing on both sides of the ball. You know, I think they have – I agree, Trubisky's play is up and down, and it's sort of hard to get an exact handle on it. I mean, we've talked about before, like, he definitely has the right head coach, Matt Nagy, who I feel like really does a good job of, like, shielding him from criticism and, like, the pressures that he might face in that role. But, you know, the defense that they have is – you know, has the ability to change the game, and a lot of the other contenders do not have that.
What I think is interesting about the Bears that, you know, I guess has come into like full vision at this point in the year is that even though, like Jenny said, the offense is a notch below or the quarterback play is a notch below, they've surrounded him with just really functional pieces.
Yep.
Like or those pieces were already in place and they're utilizing them in a different way that, like, you know, when a quarterback gets himself in trouble, what are the three things that you need? And they have all those things,
right.
You know. They have good, you know, mid-range wide receivers. They have that good pass-catching running back. They have a guy that could stretch the field deep if they need him to. But, you know, I think that those are really interesting things that Chicago's doing. And it's just functional. And
yeah.
I think that the Eagles showed last year that you can win a Super Bowl with a functional quarterback and a functional offense.
And I think there's, like, a clear vision, too. Like, I remember talking to Nagy about this. Or maybe it was Ryan Pace, one of the two. And I guess right after they offered him the job, they're flying back from Kansas City to Chicago, and they start talking about what they need. And Pace said it was like so clear, like his vision for what he wanted for each position was so crystal clear. It's like, okay, like I need a big like X receiver who can get down the field, and that's Allen Robinson. I need like a tight end. I need a move tight end that I can kind of use as a chess piece. That's Trey Burton. Like, there's just like a very developed vision for what he wanted. I've heard that a lot about Kyle Shanahan. Like that's what like Kyle has a very developed view of what he wants, and that's like when they built the Atlanta offense. I think that's sort of was the great fruition of it. But you see it with like what Matt Nagy, like what he asked for. Like, there's power in being very specific. Like, this is the way I want it to look. And so, yeah, they had to probably overspend a little for Allen Robinson and probably overspend a little for Taylor Gabriel and probably overspend a little for Trey Burton. But each of those guys, like you already you knew, okay, like this is exact. Like, we're not going to figure this out. Like, this is exactly what we want him to do.
It presents an interesting question for the executive of the year conversation.
Yep.
Because the Mac trade obviously changed the outlook for the team this year.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
As you mentioned, they have brought in perfect positions to fill some of these roles around Trubisky. But then it's sort of hard to get over the Trubisky draft, right? Picking him ahead of Watson and Mahomes.
Although they did well in that draft outside of that
They
pick.
Did well in yep. that, right. So, I mean, and if Trubisky, if he's been functional certainly in the role. I mean, yeah. he's been a part of them having the record that they have. But it's, you know,
it's hard not to think, like, what would that look like with Watson in there or with Mahomes in there.
Correct.
I'd still give it to if I don't have a vote. Do you have a vote?
Yeah, I'm undecided on the executive.
I would give it to Chris Ballard. They're potentially, they're scary. Like in a year, you look at, all right, so they draft Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith. Now their offensive line is suddenly one of the best in football, right? They draft Darius Leonard, defensive rookie of the year. Like, they've drafted other guys like Tyquan Lewis had 2 sacks. Like, they hit on so many of their draft picks. And now that Luck is Andrew Luck again, they're going forward with like this young core of players. They have the Jets' second round pick next year, and they have $100 million to spend. Like, that team like could be the best team in the AFC easy next year. And I think they're already a team you don't want to face in the playoffs. So Pace, I think, has done a great job. I think Chris Ballard's right there.
I would vote Reggie McKenzie for executive of the year.
I know you would.
Well, actually, when we were talking about the coach of the year,
posthumously,
a Twitter commenter replied to a coach of the year tweet that I had sent and said, John Gruden has made both the Bears and the Cowboys better. And that was actually a pretty good argument. Yeah. He could be the only coach in the league that's made two other teams
created
better.
Created two playoff teams.
He sure did. All right, Connor, news item number 2.
You're having so much fun doing this that, you know, I got to have the phone out when I'm ready to go here. Browns QB Baker Mayfield led a comeback on the road in Denver on Saturday, pushing Cleveland to 6-7-1 and interim coach Greg Williams to 4-2. That is what? Double? Or
that's banana. It's
double the amount of wins that Hugh Jackson had.
No, because Hugh was like 336-1.
Okay, so now he now officially has more wins than Hugh Jackson in 6 games that Hugh Jackson did in 40 games. This is a fun team. I mean, yeah. I need to stress this so much. You know, having grown up a Browns fan, obviously you lose that when you get into this business. But having so many friends and met so many people along the way, don't become a Patriots fan. Don't become a fan that expects great things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Watch that game and watch that touchdown pass. I think it was to Antonio Callaway,
yeah,
the one in the corner.
The Baker one, yeah.
That has not happened in 20 years.
Yeah.
I've watched almost every Browns game since 1999. That might be the third time I've seen that.
Yeah.
You know, like a perfect pinpoint throw, that beautiful corner of the end zone catch.
It was set up. It was set up beautifully.
It's
the whole
set up. Yeah. I mean, there's a consistent running game. Yep. There's a defense that, like Julius Peppers at the end of that game.
All right. So do you keep Greg Williams? Like, because everything that you're saying right now is like, that sounds to me like a well-coached team, right? Like that, like everything that Connor just said, like is like what you would say about like a Belichick coach team, or like the way the Eagles were last year under Doug Peterson. So, do you keep Greg Williams?
No, because he's already admitted that he would come back. As he said, like I think it was 4 or 5 weeks ago, someone asked him, "Would you come back as if you and Freddie were the OC in DC?" I believe someone in Cleveland asked him this,
yeah.
And he said yes if they brought in another head coach. Now, is that the same dangerous situation that you put Hugh Jackson in this year, where it's two guys
yeah.
that have head coaching aspirations that are in the building
those.
And, you know, demoting someone again?
I just think like the problem though, Connor, is like do you cut down your list? Like, you know what I mean? Like are you necessarily, if you're committed to keeping the coordinators, do you necessarily cut down your list of coaching candidates because you know there's going to be certain guys who just won't go there because they want to bring their own guys?
I think that's the wrong half measure. I think you have two options here. You either stick with what you've got, say we're riding the energy, and if we have to make a change in a year, fine, because we're going to make one change anyway. Mm. Or you just bring in, you know, start over, bring in the person you want. Let's say there isn't a candidate that you love this year that you think you could get this year. Then maybe you just keep what you have because it's working. But I think, you know you're going to make one more change potentially, right? So I just think doing the half measure of keeping those guys as coordinators and bringing in a head coach over them, I agree. Then you get like a candidate that you're maybe not, you know, 100% sold on because he's agreeing to those parameters. So I don't think it's the worst thing to keep what they have. And if it doesn't work, then you change next year.
You could see, and I think maybe because Greg Williams just wants another shot, like maybe he would agree to a short-term deal, which most coaches won't. But
yeah,
maybe he would agree to
right.
like a 3-year deal where you could get out
only,
of it.
Although right. he did say that he has all these offers.
I don't
so
know what you're talking
not.
About, Jenny. He's like
the
teams have been lining up for years for Greg Williams.
My fear with a lot of this stuff, like we've seen interim coach magic before, and we've seen interim coordinator magic, and you know, I thought of this when I was watching the Vikings just destroy the Dolphins this weekend. Is that a lot of the success? I mean, comes from that immediate lift of bad energy
right.
and also the drastic shift in offensive and defensive tendencies.
Yeah, because if you're firing a coach in midseason, it's right. probably so pretty bad.
Taking Hugh Jackson out of that building was a weight off of a lot of people's shoulders, so you have that momentum. And then you also have the fact that you're playing with an offense that no teams have any data on.
Right.
There is no Freddie Kitchens film to look back on. There's nothing to understand about him as a play caller. And so, you know, I think that those are two things that Cleveland has to consider. And as difficult as it might be to get rid of them at the end of the season, if that's what you know, that's something you can't measure, but that you have to
take into consideration. Honest with yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to, like, I think you have to take a hard, honest look at it. And look, me, you guys, like, we couldn't look at the tape and but we couldn't look at the tape and say, like, this is sustainable, this isn't. Like, it'd be hard to do that, but John Dorsey should be able to. Like, he should be able to take a hard look at, like, what they've put on film and say, okay, well, Freddie got him here and Greg got him here, and, like, there's just certain things that they're doing that are really cool and interesting and creative, but, like, that's not sustainable over a 2 or 3 year period. So that's what makes it difficult, you know?
You know what you do is you put when I used to make a lot of big life decisions, I would put two treats in a bowl, and I would whatever one my dog went to, you know, that kind of put the momentum in a certain direction. And so Moose, the star of Hard Knocks, you know.
Oh, now that's a good idea.
You know, just Dorsey and Moose in there and say, hey, one treat is the Greg Williams bowl and one treat is
coaching,
we'll see what's out there, and just, you know, let Moose be your guide. Because
that's actually probably more efficient, too, than, like, the pros and cons list, right?
And then you have someone to blame it on that it doesn't come back to you.
The dog.
I mean, yeah, so it's
on the
you
dog.
Know, I'd like to point out quickly, when we're talking about Freddie Kitchens, a few weeks ago, Jeff Schwartz, the former NFL offensive lineman, when I had been doing the Chiefs story, we had been corresponding about the Chiefs offense, and I'd been looking for an example of this pitch trap play that Andy Reid had in his playbook. It's from his high school when Andy Reid was in high school in the 70s from a Veer offense. And couldn't find an example on film of them running it. So 2 weeks ago, when Jarvis Landry scores the rushing touchdown, Jeff Schwartz texts me and is like, that's as close to a pitch trap as you're going to get. Basically, he faked the pitch, and then the guard pulled, and then Landry took the inside handoff, spun around, gave it to Landry. That was pretty creative stuff. And so I don't know where Kitchens got that from exactly, but
that's
he is willing to sample from different things. And I think just the whole idea of being willing to bring in stuff that Baker is used to and good at and creative. Like, there are a lot of coaches who are willing to do that, and Kitchens has done a great job with it. It was just that with Haley and Jackson, there was none of that in there.
Right. And, well, I mean, there's also, like, they just – I mean, the level of paranoia between those two that have festered over the last 2 or 3 months, just getting rid of that, like to your point, like, just getting rid of that, lifted this weight off of everybody in that building's shoulders.
God, I just still can't believe it. I Todd Haley was the funniest person on Hard Knocks in 10 years of the program, and I can't believe that there was a deeper, like, it just goes to show that, you know, you don't know everything, right? You know, and there's deeper stuff going on, but
no question. Well, they showed us, we got a little glimpse at
there was the heat, but there was also, like, his dry humor was just, it carried the program for me this year.
No question. All right, Jenny, news item number 3.
All right. The Chargers came back from 2 touchdowns down at Arrowhead, taking out the Chiefs 29-28 with a 2-point conversion throw from Phillip Rivers to Mike Williams, providing the difference-making points. So, you know, that Drake song, Charged Up, it's really, you know, been playing in my head the last few days.
You're charged up.
We all picked the Chargers last week. We all picked the Chargers.
Yeah. On the podcast. And Albert did not in the picks on Thursday.
Well, I covered my bases.
All pick the Chargers.
I don't think, like, so does this make them the favorite in the AFC? Because, look, the Patriots look awful. They have looked bad the last couple weeks, beyond just the Miami miracle. Like, their defense looks a little lost out there, right? And you have the Steelers who, I mean, for the most part of the last month, haven't been able to get it out of their own way. You have, like, that mess of teams competing for the wild card. You have the Texans who didn't look great against the Jets on Saturday night. Now they win, but they didn't look great on Saturday. Like, are the Chargers now the favorite to get to Atlanta?
I mean, they are trending the right way. Like, they're getting hot at the right time. And I think the problem was they had those two early losses to the Chiefs and the Rams, who are two of the best teams. So I think because of the early record, because there were those two early losses, it sort of masked how good the team really was. But they have that energy that, you know, we're talking about, just the confidence to go for two. And then I saw that Anthony Lynn, you know, he had told Peter King that he had studied Doug Peterson and the way he was gambling on a lot of those fourth downs last year. And so they sort of, to me, have that energy of they're gonna be gutsy. I was trying to think of the PC word to use there. They're gonna be gutsy, and I feel like that culture in the locker room is really good. I spent a little time there 2 weeks ago, and it's just like a lot of guys. They seem to just, like, really like each other and really be having fun.
I remember talking to Philip about it too. He was like, he's had to make an effort to – it's funny because he's, like, had to make an effort to, like, learn about, like, pop culture and stuff, because he's, like, literally, like – I mean, some of these older quarterbacks, he's, like, literally from a different generation. And so, like, he's had to, like – he's studied up on pop culture and all this different stuff. And he's just telling me. He's
some songs?
Like,
or
songs.
Fortnite?
Like that sort of stuff. And he's, like – because I think he's actually got – I think, like, his older kids.
I was going to say, he's got 11 kids. One of them's got to be.
I think it's like, again, he did go to his kids for it too. But I think his older kids are actually, like, much closer in age to most of his teammates than he is. Because I think he's got a kid, because he had a kid in college, right? So his last year in college was 2003. So if the kid was born in 2003, that kid would be 15 now. Closer in age to a lot of the players than Philip is.
True.
So, yeah, I think Phillip's learning, and I'm older than Phillip. So, but I think it was interesting, though, what you're talking about. Like, he said, like, yeah, you know, he's like, I really like the younger guys in the team. It's been cool getting to know them. And it's like this whole, like it's yours, guy. Like, he's tried to do that. Like, he doesn't want to be overbearing. Like, he's just like, it's yours, guys. Like, you are who, like, I was when Antonio Gates, it's a bad example because he's still around, but Antonio Gates, like, Vincent Jackson,
LaDainian Tomlinson,
like, that's who, like, he's like, you guys take it, it's yours now. So what I'm really rooting for is for the AFC Championship game to be played in a 20,000 seat soccer stadium.
That would be
fantastic.
Something tells me the NFL is going to have do a little edging, make sure that doesn't happen. You know, there'll be something kind of, you know.
Would you move it to the Coliseum? But if the Rams are, It's just a mess. Yeah,
yeah, it's a little bit of a... I mean, obviously the Chiefs are still in position because they have the better division record.
Right, but they could very easily lose this week.
They could very easily lose this week.
They play
right.
in Seattle, so... Right.
Have it back in San Diego. Give them a little treat, you know? It's big enough to at least host the, you know.
I'm sort of hoping the Raiders go to San Diego next year so we see Los Angeles Chargers at San Diego Raiders.
Ugh.
You know, it's really interesting, the environment there, because neither team is in L.A. And so I was there a couple of weeks ago, and I was at the Chargers, and then the next day I went to the Rams, which took me 3 hours in morning traffic. And the amount of media coverage is very low. I was very surprised. There are basically three reporters that cover the Rams all the time, and I was asking about it, and they said, well, it's an hour north of the city, and most people would rather stay in L.A. And get LeBron James every day versus, you know, driving an hour and you have no idea who you'll get in the football locker room. And it was a really interesting point. And then, of course, the Chargers are down in Orange County. So it's not the same, like, you walk into a locker room in Philadelphia, you know, obviously New York, but I mean, you're just thinking of other cities, right? And like, here's this huge media market, and it doesn't have, neither team has the same coverage locally as you would expect for a market that size and teams that are this good.
Right. And it's, I mean, like the Chargers, I know a couple of people at the LA Times, and I think the Chargers are something like 10th or 11th. In like web traffic, like below the Kings, below USC football, below.
Well, don't get us started on web traffic, Calbert.
All right. News item number four. And this must be contagious because you guys had to wait. You guys had trouble pulling them up, and now I'm having trouble pulling them up. News item number four, Eagles quarterback Nick Foles led Philly to a 30-23 win over the Rams at the Coliseum to keep Philly in the hunt for the NFC East title. Jared Goff has 6 interceptions and no touchdown passes in his last 2 games. All right. Level of concern with the Rams?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's weird. You know, I mentioned this earlier, but the way that McVay appeared after that game was strange to me. It was the first time that he didn't internalize all the issues.
I thought that was interesting because after the Bears loss, he basically took it all on himself.
Right. And this time it was like, there are guys that aren't doing stuff right.
Right.
You know? And here's where I think that it was always going to be sort of the fascinating heel turn in his coaching tenure. Because as the 31-year-old, if you come in and you're the offensive guru and you rip through the regular season, that's fun. And everybody looks at you as the cool guy and everything makes sense. But now if you're the 31-year-old and you've got players who are older than you in the locker room, and this is the point where everybody was concerned about the hire, right? Can you look these guys in the face? Can you MF them up and down? Can you discipline them?
Yep.
And he's never really had to do that because their first season was so good. They loaded up the team with mercurial personalities,
to say the least. They got better as the season went on last year.
Right.
Right.
Whereas so, this year, it's like, this is a pivotal moment for him, I feel like.
And it's really interesting, too, because he is the reason why, he's a huge part of the reason why they felt comfortable going out and rolling the dice on Marcus Peters, on Aqib Talib, on Ndamukong Suh. And it's so interesting because I think back to like what happened in Miami last year, right? And the reason that they went and signed Danny Amendola and Frank Gore and Albert Wilson and Robert, like the reason why they brought all of those guys in and they flushed Ndamukong Suh and Jarvis Landry and these other guys out. And I remember talking to Gase about this, and it was when things went wrong in 2017, like it's not that those guys were like compounding the problem. They just weren't doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were just letting it get worse. Right. And so they dealt with, and you'll remember this, the Ryan Tannehill thing, the injury, the Ryan Tannehill ACL tear, then the line coach with the cocaine and the strippers.
Oh, yeah.
The Hurricane, right? Like the Hurricane, which moved their, I believe, their week one game and took their bye away, right?
Right.
And so there are all these different things that were going wrong. And so things would get sideways and no one was there to kind of pull things back together and to rein the team in. And so you wonder now, like, you see the Marcus Peters thing and like the video, right? It's like when things are going poorly, how are those guys going to react? Because this is really the first time. I mean, they lose the game to the Saints earlier in the year. I mean, that's, look, it was a shootout. They played pretty well in that game. Like that's not, it's certainly not the same as what's happened the last couple of weeks.
We know how Marcus Peters is going to react. We saw it on TMZ that he was halfway into the stands by the end of that game.
Well, I mean, you know, the question, Goff's numbers, I saw PFT had a post the last night, I think it was, and his rating the last 3 weeks is lower than any starter in that range, I think, except for Sanchez, who obviously is no longer a starter. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be interesting, too, exactly what's going on there and with the offense and what are some of the reasons. I think the line play has been a reason.
Yeah. Right.
You know, they've been struggling up front.
And I think there's always been the question with Goff. It's like if everything's clean around him, like he's – majestic throwing the football. Like he just looks like he was one of these guys who's like looks like he was born to throw it. It's when things get muddy around him, like the reputation's always been like that's when he struggles. Which is true for a lot of quarterbacks, but like I remember hearing that was sort of the difference between Wentz and Goff when they were coming out, was like if you make things muddy on him and you knock him around a little bit, like he's not the same. And I think we saw like going up against teams where they clearly, like, the defensive front had an advantage over the offensive line. The Bears' defensive front is better than the Rams' offensive line. The Eagles' defensive front is better than the Rams' offensive line. Like, that's, like, it's like you draw it up. Like, that's the circumstance where he struggled, and he struggled.
Yeah, and, you know, that's sort of a metaphor for the team, right? Because last year they were playing with house money. I mean, they had been on bad teams that weren't whatever, and all of a sudden they're rolling and everything's fun, right? And so
they hadn't been to the playoffs since, like, the Martz era, right? I believe. I think it'd been, like, 14 years.
Yeah, they hadn't gone like, under Jeff
Fisher.
And,
like, to your point, it's like it was just, like, a constant ascent, like, up and up and up and up.
Yeah, and to be that good so soon, like, to have this immediate turnaround, of course the locker room culture is great. And I think, to Connor's point, is now this is the real test.
Right.
So picture it this way. This is kind of how it would break down. How would you like it if this podcast started spiraling downhill?
Would you be the glue that would hold things together?
Well, no, imagine I'm younger than you to a level that McVay is younger than some of his coaches and some of his players. If I MF'd you up and down this studio right now, how would you take that? How would you take that? Like,
wow,
if this podcast
this is taking an odd turn.
You know what I mean? Like, would it work?
It's like you're trying to find something out about me now.
Right.
No, but I'm saying, like, would it be weird? I guess it all comes down to your
personal
ability.
I know what you're saying. It's like, do they, like, it's fine to, it's, and I know what you're saying, because it's like, it's fine to act like a peer. It's fine for a leader to act like a peer when things are going great. But there's also a time when he's not a peer. He's the boss.
Got to be
a
parent.
Yeah, but
I think Sean will be fine there.
I think Sean's fine there because I don't know that he acts like a peer, because I don't know that's a fair assessment,
no,
right?
I don't think he acts like a peer. But I think sometimes players might see it that way.
Maybe because
when you're
of the
winning
age,
and you're rolling and everything else, like, it's just that is part of the issue. I think you're right. Like, that's, and I think Sean's got such a force of nature personality. Like, he's like that's such a, and I said it off the top of the show, it's such a big part of who he is as a head coach. I think he'll be fine. I think if there's an issue, it would be more the makeup of the locker room and some of the risks. Like, if something bubbles up, I think it probably has more to do with who they put in the locker room rather than who's leading those guys.
And I think that's a fair assessment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
One more point off that game, just because I feel like it needs to be said. How bad do you feel for Carson Wentz? Like,
oh, my God.
This Nick Foles comes in and may lead them on another miraculous run. And, like,
do you think,
like,
under his breath, he's like, damn it.
Yes. I mean, well, there was that story that ran in the Inquirer before the first or second week of the Eagles season where he literally would pray to get rid of the jealousy, Carson Wentz, that he felt for the teammates at the time. And, like, man, I mean.
That's a normal feeling.
It is a normal feeling.
But you're right.
It's a normal feeling, yeah.
And, you know, just that.
You want him to do good, but. Not like
right, and back at the Coliseum, where almost exactly a year earlier, I mean, that to me was very, I mean, gosh,
the
think
optics
about that
of it,
feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the place where the worst thing in your career so far happened.
And I will say this, I think part of it is when Nick Foles is in there, they do a lot to support him. They ran the ball 30 times, and they stuck with it even when it wasn't working on Sunday night.
Which has been a criticism of Peterson
this year. Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's when the running backs got hurt, they sort of got away from that. And I think there's a tendency, because he's the second pick in the draft, like, okay, like, we should be able to lean on Carson Wentz. And with young quarterbacks, that can be a problem sometimes.
Right. And I mean, even older quarterbacks, that's what the Vikings are dealing with. We're getting away from the run, putting too much on Kirk, not working exactly the way we wanted it to.
Yeah. Okay. Connor, news item number 5. I love this story, by the way.
Oh, this was very interesting. Yes.
Longtime Denver sports writer Woody Page, who I believe is at the Colorado Springs Gazette.
Is that right? I saw the Gazette on the
Gazette was on the header. Yeah.
I didn't. I
forgive us if that's
I couldn't
wrong,
remember but, if it was like because I was thinking was is that Boulder? No, the Boulder Camera, right? So
yeah.
Okay. News Gazette, I think, was what it was.
Yeah.
Right?
So it reported on Monday that John Elway flirted with the idea last December of bringing in Mike Shanahan before choosing to stick with Vance Joseph for another year. Joseph's Broncos are 6-8. A couple interesting things that I think, like, first of all, the report, which we saw Mike Kliss follow up on, who covers that team every day, and it was fascinating to me that basically the decision came to Elway that was like, no, you have to go through a coaching search, and then he's just like, meh, I'll just keep Vance Joseph. Like it didn't come down to, like, this is my guy, this is a vote of confidence.
It feels so bad
like,
for you.
It's like, I just don't feel like doing a coaching search this year.
I'm like, it's at the point I feel bad for Vance because it's
terrible.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, I always say this. I always say this with the young head coaches. Like when the Browns took a chance on Mike Pettine, right? Okay, like I think Pettine had a chance. Like I think Pettine could have been a good head coach, and you guys were around him when he was with the Jets. I think he could have been a head coach, but the problem is if you hire someone like that, and you know. Okay, this is like sort of a younger guy, and we need to. Then you have to give him time. Like you have, you can't cut off his knees while he's still learning the job. Vance Joseph was only a coordinator for 1 year. Clearly, this is a guy who, like, you need to give him a little runway to get better. If you really believe in who he is as a person and a coach, right. And he's younger, and you're taking a chance on him, you have to back him. And so I just think it's like
roster issues too. Of course, I mean, there's been bad drafts, right?
Right.
So it's not all on Joseph,
right?
Although many of the decisions he's made have been questionable.
And it feels like he's dead man walking.
Yes.
Now. Like it feels like now. Like, this is it. Like, this.
Yeah, because Klemko had a good piece from the locker room where there were players questioning the decision at the end on fourth down.
And you know what? The thing about it is, when you see stories like this, like, and we've seen this, like, pretty constant stream of these for 2 years, it's like, I think that sort of emboldens players to question the coach. You know what I mean? Like,
a great point. When Elway is questioning your team president,
right. Like, when that's coming from above, and they were pretty open last year at the end of the year, like, Elway saying he needed to sleep on it after the last game. Like, it's just like if you're a player and you look at it and say, well, this guy's probably not going to be here anyway next year, so I'll just and Robert did a good job going in the locker room and ferreting that out. But I think part of it is like if the guy who's in charge of the organization is out there saying this stuff, it's like, what do I like? I answer to Elway. I don't answer to Vance. So, like, I can say whatever I want.
He's been doing this all season. He went on the Broncos' own media channel and challenged Vance Joseph and said that he was doing a bad job, like, week 4 or 5 before they played the Cardinals. And it blows my mind that, like, you know, when Vance Joseph was hired, I think that was at the same time that the Giants were hiring. And those were looked at as the two marquee openings,
right?
Because it's not just the talent,
it's the history,
it's the organization, it's all that stuff. If I'm a head coach risking my first and possibly only chance at doing this in the NFL, I'm not coaching for John Elway. There's 0%
chance. Well, I could just tell you, like, I know there's been, so one potential solution I've heard for them would be John Harbaugh, right, as the head coach. And then bringing Gary Kubiak back from retirement as the OC. They work together in Baltimore, and Kubiak's still involved in the Broncos organization. My sense is that Harbaugh would have pause because of Elway. Like, and I think that's sort of what
you want. Elway's best friend is your offensive coordinator.
And I think that's I don't even think it's Gary. I think it's more like Elway's just got a reputation of being someone who's really, really hard to work for and tough. And he did a great job putting together that first Super Bowl team. The 2014 free agent class they had was off the charts. Like they did a lot of good things early, but poor drafts caught up to him, and he has grown this reputation of somebody who can be difficult to work for.
I would just add that with that story, it seems like, why do things in Denver seem to always happen in the back room of a steakhouse? I feel like I've read countless
Well, because
stories.
Both, like, Shanahan has a steakhouse, Elway
has
a steakhouse.
I've written stories. Like, I think Trevor Price, I wrote a story, and he'd left Denver, and things didn't end well, and he saw Shanahan in the back room of a steakhouse. Like, I just have seen so many stories that happen in the back rooms of Denver steakhouses.
How are these coaches not 300 pounds if they're eating in steakhouses every
Does
night?
Does Peyton Manning have a steakhouse there yet?
Oh, that's a great question.
Lee, is the Peyton Manning Grill in Indianapolis?
Peyton Manning's hanging around too. Like, you're starting to see him more and more at Broncos games.
That is
too.
True. That's a good observation.
Yeah, it's just, it's weird. Like, and I know he loves living out there and everything else, and it's probably part of its convenience that, like, if he wants to go to an NFL game, like, the easiest one to go to is the one down the street. But just interesting that he's sort of popped around there, too. Nothing. He's going to run for Senate in Tennessee, I heard. Like, that, wasn't there something on that? I don't know. I don't know.
Just float a rumor of him being the next head coach, Albert.
There we go.
You get a lot of listens.
Well,
on
that's
our
a good
pod.
Place. It's a good place to go to Connor for his fantasy update.
Well,
or this would be Jenny's now.
Well, actually,
we have two. We have good news to share all around. As I mentioned on the first podcast, I'm also sort of a wayward general manager for my best friend's wife's high school teacher fantasy football league, and semifinals last night against an arch rival. I was down 20 points. I had Christian McCaffrey, and he had Cam Newton. And I was trailing by 20 points. So the only way this could have worked is if my running back threw more touchdown passes than the quarterback. There's one scenario, and it happened. And we won by like 0.3 points.
Wow.
Lost my mind. And basically the only thing that was in it for me, if I got her to this point in the season, she's a baker. She said she would make me a cake that is an alcoholic cake, a cake filled with alcohol.
Like you can get wasted eating the
yeah,
cake?
Yeah, so my two favorite things in the world will be delivered to me on New Year's Eve.
Cake and alcohol.
Cake and alcohol, nice.
Combined, yeah. And so, yeah.
That's crazy. So they're like gummies but with booze?
Yeah, I mean, just a cake with a ton of alcohol in it.
Good analogy, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It was really a stunning turn of events.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were texting during this game because I had Will Lutz and my opponent had Michael Thomas. And, yeah, the score was somewhat close. And I was feeling pretty confident that I was working out. But when McCaffrey threw the touchdown pass, I think Connor had turned away from the TV. And I think he just saw 7 points and he saw it was a catch and he was kind of disgruntled. And I knew he was like, wait a second, McCaffrey threw that? It was like the scenario was unfolding in front of our eyes. It was extreme excitement. So I have lived to fight another day in our other league, and I will be facing the nemesis that we have so often mentioned on the podcast as having tweaked us all season long.
Yes.
I am a large underdog. I will be buying a dog mask to wear on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, just to get my team in the right mood.
Yeah, we are facing the stumbled into Patrick Mahomes, haughty
Nick
Caserio
wannabe.
Type. Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. This is him. I mean, this is, but you know what? This is, you know, I can't pound the table because I heard that messes with the sound, but this is what we want. This is what we play all season for.
Right. You want to beat the best. Yeah. To be the best, you have to beat the best. And this is what I'm going for.
It wouldn't mean, nearly as much if you didn't do that, if you didn't do it that way. My team, by the way, was so resourceful and like just dug deep, right? 4 points from Cam Newton, 7 points from Saquon Barkley, and I wind up winning. Somehow, I mean, got to give a shout-out to Joe Mixon, 25 points. Stephon Diggs, 12 points. Trey Burton, 11 points. Nick Chubb, 10 points. Just an all-around team effort. Next man up.
That's it.
And I thought we'd be done with the fantasy updates, but this is going to be extended another week.
I mean, you know.
But we'll have to do it. We'll actually have to, like, because the podcast is going to be a little different next week. So we're going to give everybody the championship round results. It would be the day after New Year's.
Yeah. But, you know, it's really amazing that all of us are in the finals. And I think we should just rebrand this as a fantasy football podcast since we obviously know what we're talking about.
Take that, Matthew Berry. All right,
that's
guys.
Right.
Appreciate you guys coming out. All right, we're going to jump right into the six pack. You guys know how this works. Every Tuesday, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. You ask, I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a little heart there, you get the like button on Twitter, and you get an answer here on the podcast for your Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon commute, whenever you guys listen to it. So we're going to start here. Question number one from Danny. That's at Big Lope 85. Seems like the oddest season in a while where every elite team seems beatable. What's it going to take to win it all, and what current team currently has it? I've always felt this way, Danny. And I know the cliche is defense wins championships. I think answers win championships. It's the team that has the most answers. It's the team that's the most complete. It's the team that when you take something away from them, they can hit you with something else. Why? Well, when you get to the playoffs, teams are more drilled in what they're up against. They have a better idea because they're a full season of film, what the opponent does well, what they don't do well. And when you get to that point, it's basically, okay, we're going to take X, Y, or Z away from you because the team is good enough, the coaching staff's good enough to do it. And so if you have what you do really well taken away from you, do you have an answer? And I look at the teams out there right now. I think the Saints in the NFC and the Chargers in the AFC are probably the two teams where you look at their rosters, there are the least holes, and they would have the most answers for whoever they're up against. Now, part of it for the Chargers is going to be getting Melvin Gordon healthy, getting Austin Eckler healthy. But, you know, you look at those two teams, and I think that they're the teams that probably at this point have the most answers. Question number two from Alexander Ween. It's at Alexander Ween 2. Is there a chance Arizona or Oakland draft a player other than Bosa at number one? I'm going to say no. I don't think that there's a chance that the Arizona or Oakland draft a player other than Bosa at number one. What I will say is that there is a chance that someone other than Bosa goes number one, because I think if either of those teams get the number one overall pick, one of the quarterbacks get hot, I could certainly see Arizona or Oakland trading down to accumulate picks. But right now, the sense I get is that Nick Bosa has separated himself and is sort of in a different category than everyone else in this class. The one thing that could trump Bosa going first is a quarterback, again, a quarterback getting hot and proving himself to be worthy of the first overall pick, whether that's Dwayne Haskins from Ohio State or Justin Herbert from Oregon, whoever it is, like that's a possibility. I don't think Arizona or Oakland take that player, that quarterback at number one, because Arizona's got Josh Rosen and Oakland's got Derek Carr. I could see a team falling in love with one of those guys and maybe trading up, and Arizona or Oakland being amenable to the idea of moving down a few slots. Question number three from Kim Allen. That's at KJ Shiz. Vikes the way they should be, or just luck of a bad Miami D last week? If the Vikes are the way they should be, how deep will they go in the playoffs? I love the Vikings' talent. Again, you want to talk about complete rosters. They're a little shaky on the offensive line, but that's a pretty good roster in a lot of different places. The defense has a chance to be top five in the league if they're hitting on all cylinders. And the offense did a good job of protecting the defense last week. And so I certainly think as a team that's capable of getting hot, I think the issue for the Vikings is that to get to the Super Bowl, they'd have to win three playoff games in the road, which I think is borderline impossible in the NFL. So I could see them upsetting somebody in the wild card round and making it out of there. I could even potentially see them maybe popping the Saints to the Rams in the second round. But I don't think that they can make it to the Super Bowl. Question, and by the way, that was my preseason Super Bowl pick. So I love the way they looked last week. I don't think that they can make it to the Super Bowl as things are set up right now. Question number four from Brooks Gwynn. That's at @B_Gwynn. Who should be the MVP at this point in the season? It seems fair to be close to a final opinion. My pick right now would be Drew Brees. I just tell you this. I love what Patrick Mahomes has done. He hasn't been at his he's been good, not great in the biggest spots. And to me, that's the tiebreaker, is that Drew Brees, for the most part, has been really good when the Saints have needed him most. And so there's a sentimentality of giving it to a guy who's never gotten it before, who's an all-time great, and that's part of the narrative here, and that plays into it. There's the numbers. 76% completion percentage is ridiculous. But I think as much as anything else, if you want a tiebreaker between him and Mahomes, it would be Breeze, I think, has played a little bit better in the biggest spots. Question number five. This is another one from Danny Lopes. So I usually don't do this, Danny, but I got you called up here. So at @BigLope85 gets the second question. Have defenses settled down the past few weeks, and have coaches figured out how to stop these offenses? Disgruntled over better here. I would tell you, Danny, that this is what happens every year. Offense dictates the defense. Offense knows what's come. Offense knows how the play is going to go. Defense reacts to them. That's the way football works. And so I think with more creativity and open-mindedness, more coaches taking stuff from the college level and putting it on the pro level and putting things on the pro level that pro coaches haven't maybe seen in the past, there's been this 5 or 6 week explosion of points, and then things settle down a little bit. And so I just think this is the natural order of things, is A great offense puts 6, 8, 10 games on tape, and now all of a sudden the defense really has something to work off of, especially because they've probably seen some trial and error from other defenses. And so you kind of get to a point late in the year where there's a book written on each of these offenses, and that's where we're at right now, where, you know, I think it's not defense making a comeback. It's defense getting an understanding of what's coming at them. And so it shouldn't be a surprise. I think the way that this was going to go, and I think there are legitimate stories there on what's happened with offense in the NFL. Again, the open-mindedness of it, the introduction of college concepts into the pro game, I think think tank that the NFL is becoming on that side of the ball. That's all legitimate, but it doesn't completely change the context of football, which I think is still very much about blocking and tackling, and playing defense plays into all of that. Question number 6, last question of the week from Silver Bullet, at Bullet underscore Silver. Would the Packers be better off trading Aaron Rodgers? So many needs after many misses, and can we give Chris Ballard the NFL's Executive of the Year award now? Talk about the difference a GM makes on a franchise. Yeah, I told you guys earlier in the show, I think Ballard's the Executive of the Year. Great draft class this year. And putting guys like Darius Leonard and Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith and Tyquan Lewis on that roster, they've got $100 million to spend. They've got the Jets' second-round pick next year. The trade with the Jets, where the Jets moved up to get Sam Darnold, was a home run for the Colts. I think in every way, Chris Ballard has been one of the best GMs in the league this year and over the last couple of years. And he is my Executive of the Year. As for would the Packers be better off trading Aaron Rodgers, absolutely not. They need to find somebody who can come in and work with him. They need to find somebody who can come in and challenge him. They need to find somebody who, quite frankly, he respects enough where that guy can come in and MF him a little bit. And so, no, I don't think the Packers are better off trading Aaron Rodgers. I think they need to find somebody who can challenge Aaron Rodgers. Appreciate you guys coming out. As always, we welcome your feedback here on the podcast. If you have any feedback for me, you can get to me on my Twitter page at Albert Breer, on my Instagram at Albert underscore Breer, on my Facebook at Albert R. Breer. And always remember to listen to all of our podcasts. They're all on one feed now, the MMQB NFL podcast. You can get me and Jenny and Connor. You can get the podcast with Andy and Gary. That goes up twice a week. You can get the gambling podcast. It's all on one feed. Nice and neat for you there, so you have something different football-wise to listen to each and every day of the week. You can get that on Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time. It won't be quite the same time next week. I think it'll be a day later because of Christmas, but we are going to have a podcast for you. I believe it's going to be a solo podcast. I'll keep you guys posted on that on social media, and I'll see you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.